This is Jonathan Armstrong, and thanks ever so much again for joining us for this week's TechLaw 10 podcast. We podcast every week on issues where the law and technology collide. And last week we did a summer school on the issues around emails, and I think some of you liked that format, and thanks for your feedback as ever. So we're going to do the same format, 10-minute summer school, on e-discovery. So how can you encapsulate, Eric, the work of a lifetime in 10 minutes before you leave for your rounders/baseball game?
That's right. We don't normally refer to baseball games as rounds here, but I am going to go see the San Francisco World Champions.
Yeah, it's...
And they are going to be playing in very chilly weather, but we'll do the best we can. So to try to capture e-discovery in 10 minutes, let's put it this way. As I think we've discussed, under the new rules in the United States, it's very important when litigation is brewing to get the e-discovery house in order very quickly. We've heard about how arguments about lack of adequate resources have fallen on deaf ears with judges, arguing that information is not reasonably accessible does not usually lead to sympathy from the courts. The courts have ordered the production of a wide variety of e-discovery materials, information in native format with all metadata, information stored in random access memory, efforts by those producing discovery to try to shift the cost to the requestors normally does not work. And of course, if you get the e-discovery wrong, you can be sanctioned. And the sanctions can be monetary, they can be case-ending, and they can be severe. So how in now less than 10 minutes do we try to get the job done right? The various steps along the way. The first step is information management. It's always important on the front end for companies to have policies and processes that deal with information creation, information access, information usage policies, and information retention and deletion programs. From there in the e-discovery realm, we need to have identification. There needs to be proper mapping of where the information resides via custodians and other sources of the information. It's critically important that there then be preservation of relevant information germane to a lawsuit. And even though you might have a proper retention deletion program that allows you to discard information at a certain point in time, once you know of the potential actuality or actuality of litigation, that relevant information then must be preserved, and there has to be what's called the legal hold, and appropriate custodians need to maintain the information. There needs to be notification to the proper employees and data lockdown, et cetera. From there, once the information has been identified, it's been preserved, it needs to be collected, and there are ways of going about that. There can be forensic disk imaging. Obviously, there needs to be searches for the information. Once the information has been collected, it then needs to be processed. And there are various ways of processing in terms of creation of common searchable formats, metadata extraction if it's not going to be included, or processes for dealing with metadata. From there, you have the information, but then it needs to be analyzed. What will actually be produced, what will be held back, what's determined to be privileged, and there are ways of going about that in terms of concept searching, clustering, and more, sort of from a technological standpoint. And then there needs to be, actual review and production. And I know I've said a big mouthful here, but one thing I do want to emphasize, Jonathan, is it really helps in a case to have a meaningful meet and confer with opposing counsel so as much as possible can be agreed upon what will be the relevant sources of information search. For example, will both sides agree not to restore and produce from DAC backup tapes? How many search terms will there be? What are they? Across which universes of data will those search terms be employed, and how many, and who will be the custodians whose records we're going to care about? And then last but not least, while it's important to use the best of breed technology in doing this, the goal is to win the case and not just have the fanciest bells and whistles. So you want to do this efficiently and properly and accurately, so you don't have to have a do-over or get a judge mad, but you also want to do it in such a way that advances the case. What are your thoughts, Jonathan?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I think from e-discovery, as we've said in the past, isn't such a big deal in Europe, and we tend only some jurisdictions have any form of discovery as you would know it, and those that do tend to be more restrictive. The UK, for example, in some respects has tried to narrow discovery rather than broaden it, as our perception is as happened in the US. But at the same time, whenever we're involved in e-discovery or internal investigations, there are less resources, my perception is, available in Europe to assist than there are in the US. I mean, my perception from going and speaking at technology events over there is, you know, you can't take a cup of coffee without tripping over a vendor of some form of e-discovery services. Are they all the same, or are some noticeably better than others?
Well, that's a great point and a good question. About 2 weeks ago, I spoke at the Carmel Valley e-discovery retreat, and I was one of a few lawyers speaking on topics, and there were a number of vendors there. And since I showed up, I've probably been approached by, and this is, I'm not disparaging, but I've probably been approached by, you know, two dozen different vendors, you know, selling their wares. And are they the same? Are they different? They claim to be different. That's why they want to be hired as opposed to their competitors. And there probably are some differences, but you know, I'm not here to evaluate all of them as we have this 10-minute conversation. It's important, though, to do your homework and pick the best vendor for the particular job that you have.
The other area that I've certainly seen when being almost on the back end and helping in-house counsel, particularly on internal investigations, where I have seen a noticeable difference, is their understanding of European data privacy issues. Obviously, in e-discovery and in internal investigations, there are issues. You know, just because a US judge orders you to produce a document for discovery doesn't necessarily mean that the regulatory authorities or the courts in Europe are going to give you a pass to go ahead and override the legal rights of individuals here. Is that something? I mean, obviously, I'm a little biased in every time I get asked the question, it's because it's a real case. But how much are those issues cropping up in California, or is that still the exception rather than the rule?
I would say that's the exception and not the rule, but it does come up, and it's important because, you know, generally speaking, and tell me if you agree, but, you know, in Europe, you know, privacy is protected to a greater extent than here in our country. So it is important if there is some sort of a discovery request that emanates from our country that would essentially seek information that has greater protection there, that be dealt with, and it has to be dealt with.
And this exercise sounds costly to me. How much does e-discovery cost?
Oh, it can be the tail that wags the dog, as we say. In fact, we've seen some cases settle very early because the value of the case ultimately would be outweighed by the burden and the expense of the e-discovery. Now, e-discovery efforts are, you know, there are now efforts being made to make it more streamlined and efficient, but it can be quite expensive. I had one case, Jonathan, where over 200 million separate electronic records were produced. That was expensive for all the parties involved. I will point out, though, that in that case, there were multiple billions of dollars at stake on the merits, so the discovery was warranted. But if you had a case where the value of the case itself in dispute was far less and the discovery would outstrip it, it's not worthwhile.
Yeah, I understand. Well, that's probably all we've got time for, and I think you've covered a lot of ground in a short space of time. For those of you who don't know already, we now have our LinkedIn group working. So if you're on LinkedIn, if you click down the groups tag top right of the screen, type in Tech Law 10, you'll find us. Thanks for those who've joined us in the week that we've been up and running. We've now started a discussion on LinkedIn on this topic. If you just click episode 33 eDiscovery Summer School, join in the discussion. Thanks as ever for joining. Do suggest topics to us, either as a summer school or as a substantive topic that you want us to cover. You can do that via email. We'll give you the addresses in a minute, via Twitter, or via our new LinkedIn group. As ever, all that remains is to thank you for listening. My email address is jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. And Eric, why don't you wrap up?
I will wrap up by simply saying my email is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. And please root for those World Championship San Francisco Giants. We will talk to you next week. Thank you.
Take care. Bye now.